Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast from WNYC, made on Varick Street.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Our improbably named series from Russia with Soundcheck leading up to the Sochi Olympics continues now with what is currently perhaps Russia's most famous art collective and sometime punk band, Pussy Riot. Masha Gessen is a Russian-American journalist and author of a recent book about Pussy Riot. It's called Words Will Break Cement, and she joins me here in the Soundcheck studio. Masha, thank you for being with us.
Great to be here.
So for folks who perhaps have been living under a rock for the last 2 years and haven't heard the whole tale, who is Pussy Riot?
Pussy Riot is a Russian protest art collective that created a fictional punk band called Pussy Riot. And that punk band performed a number of guerrilla performances in various locations around Moscow. Ultimately, they had a performance called The Punk Prayer in the Cathedral of Christ the Savior in Moscow, which is the biggest and most official cathedral. They prayed to the Mother of God to chase Putin out, and for this they went to prison for 2 years.
Two of them went to prison.
Three of them were arrested
and
sentenced to 2 years. One later got a suspended sentence, so she got out after 6 months. And the other two served out almost the entire sentence.
But on the cover of your book, there's 9 or 10 women, so it's kind of a collective, right?
It's an open membership collective, and that's there are two principles that they hold sacred. One is that it's open membership. You put on a balaclava, which is their trademark. You become Pussy Riot. You take it off. You stop being Pussy Riot.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is that it's anonymous,
which the balaclava sort of
kind of guarantees.
Once you put that over your face, there's not much to be seen.
Right. So nobody takes roll call. We can't really say how many members of Pussy Riot there are or have been.
Mm-hmm.
Many.
But Nadia and Maria, the two who served out their sentences, they were in a very remote part of the Soviet prison system, weren't they?
They were in various prisons, actually. They couldn't serve together because they're co-conspirators. It's like they were actually convicted of committing an organized crime.
Wow.
And so one of them was originally sent to Mordovia, which is a famous gulag that has been largely preserved from Stalin's times. And the other, Maria, was sent to the Urals.
The Ural Mountains, yeah.
And then they both got transferred, one to Eastern Siberia and one actually to Nizhny Novgorod, which was cushy, as prisons go.
So, but Eastern Siberia, about as far as you can go and still be in Russia, I guess.
Oh, you can go farther. you can fly for 11 hours and still be in Russia.
Yeah. So let's listen to a little bit of this performance that got the women from Pussy Riot in trouble in the first place. It's called Punk Prayer. That is Pussy Riot, the punk prayer, which Masha Gessen talks about in her new book called Words Will Break Cement, The Passion of Pussy Riot. And again, Nadia and Maria, two of the members of Pussy Riot, who were convicted and imprisoned by the Russian government after that performance. So one thing that strikes me about that, Masha, is there is a very kind of DIY, real early punk sound in what they're doing, you know, screaming over minimally musical performance. The media here keeps calling them a punk band, but that's not really what they are, right?
They're an invention. I mean, they're a fictional punk band. The way that Pussy Riot was born was that Nadia, who's sort of the mastermind, who had been a member of another art collective before that.
That's Vojna?
That's Vojna, yes. And who had become an activist, was asked to give a presentation on feminist art during a conference of protest participants. And she sort of decided to do the whole thing. She wanted to give people who'd been deprived of an opportunity to hear a freshman course on feminist art to sort of know the whole history. And she did a wonderful presentation, but what she noticed as she got to the end of the, her presentation is that she got very few women, Russian artists. Basically, there was one woman who had worked in the 80s and 90s who was very commercial, and that's about it.
Everyone else was from outside the country.
Everyone else was Western.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't look very good for an activist to sort of talk only about Western art. And so she decided to invent a Russian artist. And her logic suggested that if there were a Russian feminist artist today, it would be a Riot Girl kind of descendant.
So inspired by the music of Bikini Kill, Slater Kinney, you know, those bands from the Pacific Northwest in the 90s.
Right. I'm not even sure that it's right to say inspired by the music, inspired by the sort of by the ethos,
right,
and the aesthetic. And so she said, as she got to the end of her presentation, she said, and amazingly, there is a group called Pisa Riot. Pisa is sort of the Russian word for wee-wee. It's a childish word
For genitalia,
genitals.
Yeah.
Yes. Is it a group called Pisa Riot that is working today? And she showed a painting that Pisa Riot had supposedly done, and then she turned on the boombox. She took somebody else's music and she overlaid lyrics that were kind of a caricature of what feminist Russian lyrics would be if they existed. and she and her friend Yekaterina Samotsevich, who was the co-organizer of this whole thing, walked out of the room as the mostly male audience just kind of went catatonic.
Listening to this
invented band.
Which is, the song is called Kill the Sexist.
Right.
So borrowing the music from the British band Cockney Rejects and using a dictaphone to dub their lyrics over the top. That is very punk. This is the fictional band that would come to be known as Pussy Riot.
Мать твоя в грязной посуде, протухшей жрачкой в грязной посуде, пережаренные курицы моют полы. Мать твоя живет в тюрьме. Горшки отмывает, отстойно в тюрьме никогда не бывает свободы. Адская жизнь, господство мужчин.
Pussy Riot, Kill the Sexist. So that Masha Gessen, that would have been their first official
creation.
Yeah, that's their creation myth.
Right.
So once Nadia has sort of proposed this band out there, now she has to make it happen.
Well, she doesn't have to, but I think they decided they liked the idea, and they actually liked the process. It was just the two of them. It was Katya Yekaterina Samosevich, who was one of the three people arrested, and Nadia, who, and you can hear their voices quite clearly. Mm-hmm. You can actually hear that they had quite a learning curve musically from that first song to Punk Prayer.
Yeah.
But yeah, then they decided that they actually wanted to do a real recording as PC Riot. And they found some musicians to help them.
In the case of Pussy Riot, that creative impulse seems to contain a fair amount, a healthy dose of humor.
Oh,
would
absolutely.
You say?
Yes. I mean, it's difficult to untangle the ironies because, as I said, that those lyrics, which the song that you just played,
Kill the Sexist,
Kill the Sexist, which contains stinky socks and you know, the brilliant punchline, envy your own penis. You know, that's clearly they were fantasizing about this wild and bizarre group that would make up ridiculous lyrics.
Mm-hmm. They also were very interested in kind of documenting their own performances. And one of the great ironies is you tell this wonderful story about Nadia's husband, Petya, is in prison. It's, you know, he and a bunch of guys have been swept off the streets during the demonstrations. And the girls climb up on the – is it a garage?
It's a garage roof, yeah.
And they perform this song, and the cops are waiting for them to get down so they can arrest them. And then it turns out the police have taken really fabulous photographs. And they've been trying somewhat unsuccessfully to document their stuff. And here's the police who've done their job for them.
Right. Actually, the you've just conflated two different performances, but they're both really fun. One was, yes, when they performed on the garage roof outside the jail, which was a little bit of a crisis for them because it was their first sort of bona fide performance. What they had done was fictional performances that only looked really like performances once they were on videotape. Mm-hmm. And they considered the video clip to be their finished product, not the actual performance. Whereas when they went to the jail and sang for the several hundred guys who had been imprisoned for the demonstrations, they performed for them. And I think they didn't quite know what to think of that, whether they had sort of broken their founding principles. They were all about 2 months old at the time. And then they went to Red Square.
The founding principles.
The founding principles and the group itself, yes. And then they went to Red Square, which is where that incident with the police happened, when the police didn't know how to classify them. They were trying to really figure out whether they were political demonstrators or prostitutes or what, because they were dressed funny. They were, it was minus 20. They were in these sleeveless dresses and tights. And so they brought in these pictures to examine them and sort of try to figure out how to book them. But the women themselves, sitting in the holding cell, asked to see the pictures and were terribly excited about how good it looked. And that's actually the picture on the cover of the book. It was the Red Square performance.
Let me ask you about the title of the book, Words Will Break Cement. Can you tell us where that comes from?
That's actually a quote from Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the author of the Gulag Archipelago. And Nadia used it in her closing statement in court. Mm-hmm. And I should say that the trial is one of the most bizarre things, I think, to have ever happened anywhere. It's basically a witch trial that happened in the 21st century in one of the largest cities in the world, the largest city in Europe. As the shocked public looked on. It was very difficult. I think that I have about 50 pages of the trial in the book. It was very difficult to condense it to that because I almost felt like I had to go on and on and on to convey the full absurdity of what happened. And so at the end of that absurdity, where even the defense seemed completely insane, the defense lawyers were totally out of their depth. At the end of this, the three women said their closing statements, which were the first note of sanity and reason in a 9-week pandemonium. And Nadia made this very strong political speech. And one of the things she said was, in the end, I believe words will break cement.
So they were not aware of, you know, the whole Samizdat culture, but at least she had some awareness of some of the protesters, some of the great dissidents who had come before her.
I'd say she had some awareness. I mean, I know that she read a lot of the dissidents while she was in prison. In fact, that was part of sort of our connection was that I was sending her stuff to, and other people were sending her stuff to read. And I think discovering that legacy has actually been incredibly important for her and in shaping her activism once she's come out of prison.
So has Pussy Riot, has this whole thing had an impact on the arts and cultural community in Russia, either as a galvanizing or as a perhaps chilling example of what happens?
It's very difficult to generalize. They're so exceptional. They're so sort of anomalous in their very being and in their character that it's hard to say what kind of cultural impact they've had. They've certainly, their arrest and prosecution has had a huge impact on the protest culture.
In what way?
In a couple of ways. One, on the one hand, they have, and this is where I think they've succeeded hugely, is they have managed to shine a light on the problems that they wanted addressed. The symbiosis of church and state, which was sort of an open secret that no one really felt brave enough to address. LGBT issues, which 2 years ago when they brought them up seemed, you know, I didn't realize that was going to become the biggest issue in Russian politics. I was ambushed by it and I'm gay. And they really realized what was going on, sort of the extent to which Russia was dragging itself back into the Middle Ages. They've also created images and concepts to help people talk about the stuff, including addressing the Mother of God, which has become a meme throughout Russian culture. Mm-hmm. Sort of, Mother of God, didn't we ask you nicely to get rid of him? But on the other hand, their arrest has had a major chilling effect. They were the first people in Russia who were imprisoned given actual jail time for peaceful protest, not 15 days administrative arrest like those guys that they had performed for, but actual time in penal colonies that's measured in months and years. Since then, there have been dozens more. And it is very well understood that that yes, you can go to jail and your entire life can change just because you take part in peaceful protest. Yeah.
Are you still in touch with them?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know if they have, I mean, with LGBT being one of the, sort of the found, Nadia's founding principles, and with the whole, you know, this is what everyone is looking at Sochi for, is, you know, how will the ban on, how is it phrased, gay...
Homosexual propaganda.
Propaganda, right. I guess people are wondering, you know, will they be somehow active, vocal during the Olympics?
Well, they've been very vocal. I don't think that anyone has heard them very well, but they've been very vocal about calling for a boycott. Unfortunately, they came to this rather late. They were in prison until the end of December. There is this misguided idea that there are no Russian dissidents calling for a boycott. In fact, that's not true. And perhaps the most two of the most important and outspoken Russian dissidents, Maria Alekhina and Nadezhda Tolokonnikova, are calling for a full boycott of Sochi.
Well, as we've seen, after much, well, actually, after not all that much internal debate, most countries have sent full delegations, although none of the higher officials of our government will attend. But aside from that, do you expect to see them during the Olympics?
Well, they're not planning to go to Sochi. They have more important things to do.
Yeah.
They've devoted themselves full time to prisoners' rights. I do hope to see them in the media because, frankly, this is the last burst of major media, Western media attention to Russia. For a while, Russia is going to disappear from the front pages right after the Olympics. So I'm glad they are here, and I'm glad they're going to have their say.
We've been talking about the members of the Russian performance art and occasional punk band collective known as Pussy Riot. They are the subject of Masha Gessen's book, brand new. It's called Words Will Break Cement, The Passion of Pussy Riot. Masha, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
This is Soundcheck. Thanks for listening. Stay connected by subscribing to the Soundcheck podcast on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and download the new WNYC mobile app for free. See you next time. I'm John Schaefer. Освободи, освободи, освободи расщепку! Когда не поздно стать госпожой, дубинки заряжены, крики все громче, разомни мышцы рук и ног, полицейский лижет у тебя между ног. Освободи, освободи, освободи расщепку, освободи, освободи.